It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Tuesday, May 19th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. A bunch of hardware made in China just went on sale in the U.S. Okay, that doesn't sound like anything different from any other day, but in this case, we're not just talking about products that were assembled there. Chinese tech brand Xiaomi opens its online doors this week to buyers in the U.K. and the U.S. Our friend at CNET, Lindsay Turrentine, is here with more. Hi, Lindsay. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Xiaomi, it's arrived in the USA. What's going to be on the shelves?
There are going to be headphones, a fitness band called the Mi Band, and two battery packs. And that's it. Headphones, fitness tracker, two battery packs. This is really a way for Xiaomi to test the U.S. waters, figure out how to get past U.S. customs. They're going to learn a lot from this.
So, Lindsay, is this just sort of the beginning of us seeing actual Chinese brands making their way into the U.S. market for consumers?
I think we are right at the beginning of Chinese brands making a name for themselves outside of China. I mean, to a certain degree, we've seen Lenovo doing this for quite some time, but still using a brand name that was established in the United States. Xiaomi seems to be picking up traction. I think that's only going to pick up as industrial design from within China gets better and better.
Lindsay Turrentine at CNET. Earlier this year, YouTube Kids launched as Google's version of a streaming video network for children. Well, today, some people are lodging a complaint with the Federal Trade Commission saying that, in short, YouTube Kids is not actually kids safe, and you can find adult material in the YouTube Kids app. Dale Kunkel is professor emeritus of communication at the University of Arizona and is one of the people making the complaint. Dale, good to have you on.
Good to be with you.
How are you finding this inappropriate content in the YouTube Kids app?
We launch the app, and then we use the search function. But using very benign terms such as family tradition, I put that in once, and I got a lecture about the tradition of family violence, child abuse, and so forth. This type of material is inappropriate for kids, and there's no way it should be allowed on that app.
How does this tool represent a change in how programming is chosen for children?
In the past, media content for children was always produced and intended for child audiences.
And chosen by a human.
Absolutely. YouTube is trying to let kids have access to all these videos, but they think they're filtering out the, quote, bad stuff. They're clearly not doing that. I don't think it's possible to do that effectively using technology.
What should the rules be for aggregating this kind of content then?
Well, free speech plays a more important role on the internet than it does on television. That said, Google has made commitments to parents that only child-safe, family-friendly material will be allowed on this app. They're simply not delivering on that.
Dale Kunkel is professor emeritus of communication at the University of Arizona. Dale, thank you very much.
Thanks.
By the way, yes, we did reach out to Google on the various points Professor Kunkel made. They didn't give us a response by deadline. If you've been listening to our show over the past few weeks, you know that Bitcoin is back, baby, at least in the headlines. Banks are thinking about using some of its technology. New startups are trying to build it into special wallets. And today, a new book on Bitcoin is out. Nathaniel Popper of the New York Times is the author of Digital Gold, Bitcoin and the Inside Story of the Misfits and Millionaires Trying to Reinvent Money. Nathaniel, thanks for talking with me.
Thank you for having me.
This idea of digital credits has been in science fiction for a long time, and it sort of gets its start, at least for your story, in the 90s.
Yes, and it's not hard to see why when you think about the notion of cash is a very sort of crude notion, you know, these pieces of paper that we pass around. And so every science fiction had its version of the money of the future. But when this really, I think, started to bubble to the surface was, as you said, in the 90s, largely with this group called the Cypherpunks.
Who were the Cypherpunks?
Sure. They were one of the first online communities, and a lot of them were concerned most of all with the issue of privacy. A lot of the tools that they used were cryptography and advanced math, and that's how a lot of this got started.
There's an interesting thing that happens in Bitcoin's life as we know it thus far, where the financial crash happens. There's a lot of distrust in traditional financial systems. Is that an essential kind of moment?
I think so. When you look at some of the earlier experiments in creating virtual currencies, the thing that they failed at was in attracting followers. What money needs is people to use it.
Has to be a shared illusion.
Absolutely. And Bitcoin appeared just a few months after Lehman Brothers went bankrupt. And it was pretty clear that a lot of the people who were initially drawn to this idea very much had the financial crisis in their mind and wanted to see a new way to create money.
What's next? Where is this all going?
Well, I think a lot of the most interesting stuff is happening in developing countries where there aren't the kind of smoothly functioning credit card networks that we have. So I think that's one part of what's going on. The other part is Wall Street's engagement with this, and is the financial sector acknowledging that there is some new conceptual advance that allows money to move around in ways that are not possible in the current financial system. Every bank that I spoke to has a group of people who's incredibly excited about this, who is fascinated both by the technology, but also, of course, by the tale of this crazy technology and how it essentially came out of nowhere.
Nathaniel Popper is the author of Digital Gold, Bitcoin, and the Inside Story of the Misfits and Millionaires Trying to Reinvent Money. Nathaniel, thanks.
Thank you.
I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.